most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. It is Tuesday, May 15th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. We can do it together if you get involved. Just visit norml.org. We have a most excellent audio stash for you here today. We'll speak with Philippe Lucas of the Vancouver Island Compassion Society. We spoke with Philippe from the steps of the British Columbia Supreme Court about the Vicks case happening there now. Also on the program today, we'll speak with Gabriel Saya, the Director of State Organizing and Policy Project at the Drug Policy Alliance, about compassionate medical marijuana use in Connecticut and bills that are moving forward there. All week long here on the Audio Stash, we're going to have a state legislative policy focus. We'll speak with Ray Warren of the Marijuana Policy Project and Normal Senior Policy Analyst Paul Armentano on Wednesday and Thursday of this week. Folks, this is the busiest state legislative reform season in history. Make sure you get involved with local efforts right now. We have links to the Take Action Center up there at normal.org and normalaudiostash.com. Really, folks, there's no way to explain how important, how valuable, and how much impact your phone calls and letters and emails to state elected officials can really have. So get involved today. Visit the Normal Take Action Center. Also have some music for you here today. We'll round out the show with some pod safe music here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash as we get into summer. And we're quickly coming up on our 1 year anniversary here on the Audio Stash. We premiered the program on June the 5th, 2006. And folks, there have been almost 2 million downloads of this program since then. About 50,000 listeners a week here to the Audio Stash. I want to thank each and every one of you for taking time to download the program and for sending in your emails and interacting with the program. It really has been a wonderful year full of incredible marijuana content. You can catch it all in our archives at normalaudiostash.com, up at normal.org/podcast, and of course, up at iTunes. We'll have some special programs in our anniversary week, and we'll take a look behind the scenes here at the production of the Audio Stash right around June the 5th of 2007, so stay tuned for all that. Let's get into our stash today. First up on the Audio Stash today, we're going to have a News Focus interview. ¶¶ Philippe Lucas is the co-founder of the Vancouver Island Compassion Society, or the VICS. He's one of the 1,400 registered legal medical marijuana users in Canada and a research fellow at the Center for Addiction Research in British Columbia. Philippe and the VICS have a case before the British Columbia Supreme Court this week, where yesterday Dr. Robert Melamed from the University of Colorado in Colorado Springs and a frequent guest here on the program gave testimony before the court regarding medical marijuana. We caught up with Philippe yesterday afternoon from the courthouse after a day of testimony had come to a close. Philippe, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Thank you very much, Chris.
It's wonderful to speak with you today, Phil. Now, if you would, tell us how the Supreme Court case originated and where it stands now.
Absolutely. This case actually stems back from an RCMP, which is our federal police force, raid on a production facility that was initiated and maintained by the Vancouver Island Compassion Society. The Vancouver Island Compassion Society is a registered nonprofit medical marijuana research and distribution organization that I founded here in Victoria in 1999. And so during that 2004 raid, the police seized 900 plants from that facility and about 6 years of breeding and genetics research that we've been doing. We've been working here at the Compassion Society on strain symptom correlations, and we were actually breeding certain strains to deal with certain conditions and the symptoms of different medical conditions. And this is after 3 years of making its way through the courts, finally the court case that's come about. And what we've done as a result of these initial charges, two of my good friends and former employees of the VICS are facing some charges as a result of that raid, is we've launched a constitutional challenge against the federal medical marijuana program. We're going to use this as an opportunity to show the incredible problems with our federal medical marijuana policy and program.
Now, tell us about some of those problems with that medical marijuana program. I saw a report earlier this year that showed the government-grown medical marijuana was marked up in price very highly to the patients, and then that this marked-up marijuana was also pretty low quality.
That's exactly right. There have been problems from this program from the onset, and it was a program that was actually court-ordered originally, and so it's not like we suddenly had one of our governments out here or one of our political parties decided they wanted to be compassionate towards Canada's critically and chronically ill. As a result of a couple of court decisions in 1999 and 2000, our government was forced to put in place a medical marijuana program. And in 2001, as a result of another court decision, it was forced to produce cannabis for Canada's critically and chronically ill, which it began distributing in 2003. Now, out of that initial batch of cannabis, the first 93 people who received it, 29 of them physically returned it to Health Canada. And this is and right now, although this program is going on 6 years plus, right now we've only registered 1,700 legal users in all of Canada, and only about 500 of those people are actually ordering cannabis through the Prairie Plant System production facility. And for the viewers who don't know this, the federal government and Prairie Plant Systems, its contracted producer, actually grow cannabis 500 feet below ground in an old zinc and copper mine in Flin Flon, Manitoba. Only a government would come up with such a backwards way of producing a medicine for some of our sick and suffering citizens here.
And Phil, tell us about some of the testimony being offered. I know you've got Dr. Bob up there with you today.
Yeah, we've got Dr. Bob Melamed from the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. He's up here testifying on really two specific points up here. A, that different strains are really important to treat different conditions and different symptomology. Right now, the federal government only offers a single strain of cannabis, and it's widely believed that's one of the reasons that it hasn't been well accepted by the end users. And he's up here also to talk about some of the concerns over gamma irradiation. Because of the high levels of biological impurities in our federal cannabis supply, the government submits it to gamma irradiation. It's literally irradiated. And that's a controversial technique that's never been tested for safety on any inhaled product anywhere in the world, and that also has the negative effect of producing compounds called unique radiolytic compounds that may be dangerous to health, and it also destroys terpenoids, which are therapeutic agents found in cannabis that hasn't been gamma irradiated.
And what do you hope will be the outcome and the impact from this case once it's seen through?
Well, we really hope that this, if we're successful, we're going to be able to ease access to medical cannabis for those who need it most here in Canada, hopefully by either improving or finding ways to circumvent our onerous centralized approach right now, where basically a bureaucrat in Ottawa right now is the ultimate decider, the ultimate decision maker as to whether or not I, as a medical user, use or am allowed to legally use cannabis or not. And and as well, we'd really like to be able to legalize the work of community-based dispensaries like the Vancouver Island Compassion Society. And so what we're trying to do basically is make the courts realize that even though Health Canada's own research suggests over a million Canadians currently use medical marijuana, we have a program and a system right now that's only protecting 1,700 of them. And so the vast majority of medical cannabis users in Canada continue to be vulnerable to arrest and prosecution, and that's simply not the intent of our federal program.
And Philippe, a lot of folks, well, American folks, have this view that British Columbia is very accepting on the issue of medical marijuana and marijuana in general. I have to wonder, though, is that acceptance real, and is it something that reaches up to the British Columbia Supreme Court?
You know, the view of BC as being more accepting may be more myth than reality. We actually have more drug arrests in BC per capita and more cannabis arrests in, per capita than anywhere else in Canada. We also have slightly higher rates of use, but I do think that in BC, right now, in terms of policy development in general, we're the home of Canada's only safe consumption site in terms of people use intravenous drugs. We're the home of the biggest Naomi trial, the opiate maintenance trial in North America. And so I do think that in BC we've been more progressive at looking at harm reduction in general. And I am hoping that the tone of that is going to help the judge make a more reasonable decision in regards to safe and effective access to medical cannabis.
Well, Philippe, I really appreciate you taking time to speak with us here today from the British Columbia Supreme Court, and I look forward to further updates on this case as it moves forward.
Chris, we're going to be in court until Friday, and I'd love to talk to you after that and let you know this session of court's gone. And it looks like we're actually going to continue the case in early August as well. This thing's turned into a monster, but hopefully it'll be one that that will have a serious positive impact for Canada's critically and chronically ill.
Excellent, Philippe. Thank you again.
Thank you very much. Have a great day, and keep up the good work.
Thanks again, Phil. Philippe Lucas is the co-founder of the Vancouver Island Compassion Society, or the VICS. He's one of the 1,400 registered legal medical marijuana patients in Canada and a research fellow at the Center for Addiction Research in British Columbia. We have links to the VICS at normalaudiostash.com.
What's up, y'all? This is Soja, and you are right now listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Big up yourself.
Another edition today of our Tuesday segment, Government at Work. Here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash, we speak with everyone involved with marijuana reform. We're going to spend some time this week, today in our Tuesday legislative segment, but also tomorrow and Thursday, highlighting medical marijuana and marijuana reform bills in action around the country. During the week, we'll speak with legislative policy coordinators at Normal, the Drug Policy Alliance, and the Marijuana Policy Project. Today, we'll start out by talking about some strongly supported legislation moving forward in Connecticut, with Gabriel Saya, the director of the State Organizing and Policy Project at the Drug Policy Alliance. Gabriel, welcome here to the Audio Stash today.
Thank you, Chris.
And wonderful to speak with you today, Gabriel. Let's talk about compassionate medical marijuana use in Connecticut. If you would, give us an update on that effort.
Many of your listeners probably know we've been working on medical marijuana in Connecticut for many, many years, and have done so with a number of allies, and particularly folks in the state, with one particular group called the Better Way Foundation. And this year we have a House bill that's in play, 6715, that has been introduced again by Representative Penny Bakayaki. And we've been trucking along. The bill has gone through four committees now, and it's about to hit the fifth committee this week, which will be the Appropriations Committee. And we're hoping that we can get through that, and then we'll be on to the House floor for a full vote.
And Gabriel, I think it's also striking how much on-the-ground professional support there is for medical marijuana in Connecticut. You've got the Nurses Association, also a cancer center at the Hartford Hospital. Really, this is just the strongest support the issue can garner.
Yeah, it's been remarkable. There's a widespread base of support in Connecticut for this issue, and that spans everything from the medical community to professional community and to, you know, urban and rural communities and suburban areas. So the partnership that we've been able to put together and the campaign around this has been very successful, and we're feeling really confident.
Now, we've also seen Rhode Island make their medical marijuana program permanent this year, and also some interesting citywide changes and some support growing in Massachusetts. So, you know, is New England becoming a real activity center for this type of reform?
No, I think it is. I mean, between what's going on, you know, this year with Rhode Island and then the bill that is being considered now in Connecticut, and then you also have New Jersey and New York that are considering legislation, it could very well be that the Northeast region is, it's certainly ahead of the curve, I think. And if New York passes its medical marijuana bill this year and New Jersey is certainly looking hopeful, then we may end up, you know, with instead of 12 states now, by the end of 2007, with 15 states. Now, that may be a hopeful, you know, or an optimistic, you know, guess, but it's, I think it's entirely possible.
Now, Gabriel, I know there's a lot of blind support for tough-on-everything policies in New England, but what are some of the hurdles faced by reform in a place like Connecticut?
Our biggest challenge, I think, has been from the White House, you know, where the ONDCP, you know, John Walter's office, has dispatched a number of his, agents and representatives at various points to come and speak out against, you know, medical marijuana legislation, or to put things out into the press, or to make calls, you know, on an inside basis to encourage opposition leaders within the legislatures, you know, to stand up and resist this. And it's becoming more and more trite, and it's certainly ridiculous, because many of the claims that are made, well, all of them, in fact, are certainly debatable. I mean, we have the science, we have the research, and every time they say something that is outlandish, like, well, if, you know, medical marijuana is a ruse for legalization, we find it really hard to believe, for instance, that the Connecticut Nurses Association is part of some kind of conspiratorial plot to legalize marijuana. And it's their arguments end up not being able to hold weight. And in fact, in many respects, the opposition in a place like Connecticut, I mean, we're not through the legislature yet, and, you know, you can never say never when you're working on a legislative campaign, or you can never say it's guaranteed, rather. But we are pushing hard, and we're confident. But one of the interesting things is that our opposition in Connecticut has probably helped us much more than they've hindered us, because of these outlandish claims that they have made. So, at this point, we see our biggest obstacle being, ONDCP and the kind of national weight that they're able to bring, whether that's public or private. And then two, you know, when you get these ideologues within state legislatures that just for the most ridiculous of reasons decide that, you know, this is what they're going to make their stand on and try to stop, you know, this wave from going forward.
And something that always surprises me, happily surprises me, when I look at the state policy reform legislation is that it always has truly strong bipartisan support. And the same there is true in Connecticut, with Democrats and Republicans coming together on this issue.
Yeah, it really is. In Connecticut, it's what's very interesting as well is that we have a Republican sponsor of the bill, Penny Bakayaki, and she has been joined by the Legislative Black and Puerto Rican Caucus. And what is particularly unique about this is that last year and in previous years, leadership within the Black and Puerto Rican caucus were very resistant to this bill. And it was only through the process of the campaign where we actually shifted the way that we frame and talk about medical marijuana, and not to we keep talking about it as a patient's rights issue and as a family issue, and certainly doctors need to be able to recommend the treatments that work the best, and then there's certainly all the science there that shows that marijuana can benefit in a variety of ways for certain people. But then there is a racial justice argument to be made here, and this is something that we did in with our partners in the state, a Better Way Foundation. They're just remarkable at this in terms of using this as a community organizing strategy. We talk about it as a racial justice bill because we know that the primary people that get targeted for arrests, for marijuana arrests in the country, are Black and Latino people. Now, so that doesn't mean that doesn't affect white folks. Obviously, white people are getting arrested, too. There's almost 1 million people a year that get arrested for marijuana, so, it's hitting everybody. But in places like Hartford, the primary targets of the policing and the drug war regime there are people of color. And when the medical marijuana bill, passes and people are going to have an affirmative defense and patients will be given cards, then when they are pulled over because of racial profiling, as is happening all over the country, those that do have those, cards from the public health department will, have a level of protection that they didn't have previously. And by framing it along these lines as a racial justice bill, along with also a health bill and so forth, it has really shifted some of the debate within Connecticut. And so now we have full support of the Black and Puerto Rican caucus, and that caucus has joined with, some very conservative members within the Republican caucus. The Black and Puerto Rican caucus is entirely Democratic. So they've joined forces with many members of the Republican caucus to say, this is important for all people in Connecticut, and we have to move this forward in a bipartisan way.
Also, too, Connecticut, they have the same issue with marijuana policy as does every state, although some states are certainly worse than others, that marijuana prohibition enforcement and incarceration comes down so disproportionately on people of color. We've highlighted it here on the Audio Stash with people like Dr. Andy Golub and Clarence Page. So, Gabriel, to me, it doesn't go too far to say that prohibitionists, those out there who want to maintain the current drug policy, are indeed supporting a racist policy.
I mean, it certainly is when we consider that the people that are being locked up in droves under this, in many of our urban areas, are people of color. If you take a place like New York City as an example, where New York is a decrim state. I'm sure many of your listeners know this, where there was, I think it was 12 states in the 70s that passed, varying levels of decrim laws. So in New York, you can actually possess in your home, on your person, marijuana. I believe that it's up to 28 grams, and it's a fine, if you get caught. And very few people do, except that New York City actually has the highest arrest rate in the country for marijuana. Here, they don't arrest people for marijuana possession. It's called marijuana in public view.
Right, right.
And almost 90% of those arrests are all Black and Latino, young, almost entirely young men. And it is unbelievable that this is going on, number one. I mean, it's on top of the fact that the arrests are costing taxpayers millions of dollars, and that it's a waste of time and a waste of resources. It's also, giving 40,000 young people a year a criminal record for something that it's outlandish. Now, I think you're right. There is an argument that can be made that particularly as it relates to medical marijuana, saying, look, we have patients, so not only are the opponents have to argue that they think that someone who has cancer or multiple sclerosis or another debilitating condition should be arrested for using something that works for them, but essentially what they're tacitly supporting is this regime of racial disparities and racial profiling in the policing system. And so that's one of the things we've talked about very explicitly in Connecticut. And in many ways it's really changed the debate, and it's left the opponents even more and more isolated and looking more and more ridiculous.
Indeed. Well, Gabriel, this has been a great discussion here today. I really appreciate you taking time to speak with us about the Drug Policy Alliance's work there in Connecticut.
Thanks a lot for having me on, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Thank you again, Gabriel. Gabriel Saya is the director of the State Organizing and Policy Project at the Drug Policy Alliance. We'll speak with Gabriel again this Thursday about the racial factors to prohibition enforcement and the Drug Policy Alliance's work in New York State to repeal the Rockefeller-era drug laws. We have links to the Drug Policy Alliance on our website today at normalaudiostash.com.
Hey, how's it going? My name's Will. I don't work at a used record store. I don't own an iguana, although I'm sure they make great pets. I don't have dreadlocks or play the acoustic guitar. I can remember quite well, thank you, and no, I don't constantly have the munchies. When 420 comes around, I've still got 40 minutes of work left. I've never hit a girl on a bike with my car or shot my friend with a shotgun. I've never had to apologize for letting a girl I was watching drown in a pool while I was getting high because, duh, I wouldn't be getting high if I was around children. I'm a regular guy who works regular jobs, just like the majority of all Americans who use marijuana occasionally and responsibly. My name is Will, and I'm normal.
Next up today, we have some music found up at podshow.com. We have links to all the artists we play at normalaudiostash.com. Music found at podshow.com. We have links to all the artists at normalaudiostash.com.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at Normal, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
To Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's NORMALAUDIOSTASH.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow. Podcasting Technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.